those people like to go on detoxes. Detox.
They go somewhere and detox. You know, have herbal teas and diets and massages and so forth. Just, you know, makes you question, well, if the rest of life is so toxic, what are we doing? A meditation retreat is like a detox of the mind, but the point of it is that perhaps if we learn a few things, we could also stop getting toxic. So it's a little more than just remedial. It's also altering a foundation where one takes in toxins or even fabricates, constructs toxins for the mind. Detox or purification. Purification of citta. Citta can be translated in several ways. Awareness, heart, mind, spirit. It's not the thinking system, though the thinking system occurs to it. This is where thinking lands. It takes energy from the citta to think. Citta gets activated in order to produce thought. The citta gets activated in order to produce emotions and impulses and intentions and drives. And the citta can also, through cultivation, can also stop doing that, can relax, not produce thoughts and emotions and drives, and still be present. In fact, this rest state is considered to be the supreme happiness, supreme peacefulness. So purification means purification in several ways. First, purification of directly unwholesome activities, negativity, abuse, indulgence, conceit, domination, fear, guilt, regret, and so on. Particular activations that occur. And these activations can get to the point where we no longer have much say over them. They just start happening. And that's one of the wake-up signs that we recognize we're not really in charge of this citta. It's this things, these activations have just started to happen. I'm getting fearful. I'm getting anxious. I'm feeling negative. I'm critical all the time. You know, I'm jealous. I'm greedy, I'm indulgent, I just can't stop it. And this is the wake-up call. That these activations are not personally activated. They're reflex, compulsively activated. But the way that our view is the view, our attitude, the attitude that's also present, is also an activation, says, well, this is me, this is what I am. So you could say there are two levels of activity. And so we have the direct activations, which can be extremely unwholesome and unpleasant, disagreeable. So we'd like to clear those. Then the compulsiveness, the knee-jerk, the compulsive familiarity of activations. So we keep becoming me all the time, which could be okay if they're good. But there's another level of purification, which means that doesn't need to happen. And this means there's a state of openness, rest, immediacy. There's no future, there's no past, there's no position, there's no holding it as me compared with you. So this is an ending of pressure and stress. Yeah. The pressure and stress to always get it right. The pressure and stress to always be on top. The pressure and stress to be always someone that everybody agrees with and likes. The pressure and stress to be responsible and make sure everything works for everyone else. These are maybe, you know, activations that have a lot of good intention in them. One doesn't deliberately want to go about being disagreeable and useless and incompetent. But the compulsion to have to be always right and okay and perfect and cheerful and bright and lovable and all that is also a pressure. And behind it there's a kind of fear of loss of personal esteem, personal position. Something never really deeply lets go. And to recognize that there could be a purity that is not something I have to keep doing. It's quite natural. There's a natural purity. It doesn't have to be made into a self. I don't have to keep doing it. So these different levels of purification. Purification of from the unskillful, and then purification from selfhood. An important resource in accomplishing that purification is energy, awareness and energy. Awareness is awareness of the skillful and the unskillful, the near and the far, the foolish and the joyful, is awareness of that. Yeah. So this can be our refuge place whereby, as is in the conventional refrain, all things arise and pass, and one becomes increasingly dispassionate towards these phenomena. This alone, I think, is inadequate in terms of practice path, because it's difficult to really, honestly, fully, completely sustain that. We can keep it as an idea. It's a good idea and it's a good thing to remember. But one does feel energetically oppressed by difficult moods and feelings. And tends to easily get swamped with thoughts, even though you're watching them arise and pass, it's still happening. So we find the quality of energy helps to generate a particular power and strength that really drains or resets how our mind, our citta, gets activated. So instead of these citta being activated to produce thoughts and emotions, that energy, activation takes energy. If you gather and collect and stabilize the energy, the activations slow down, can be seen more thoroughly, can be checked, can be even withdrawn. Like, so the energy doesn't have to run down those same old channels. This is the principle called samatha, or stabilizing, soothing, calming. And it doesn't mean, actually it means a little more than calming, it means steadying, making it even. So sometimes calm itself can be a bit of a problem because you don't start with calm, you start with energy. And you use energy to stabilize, and as you stabilize, then calm arises. If you calm, you start trying to calm things down, you tend to suppress or go a bit numb or sleepy. So your first inclination is to energize in a different way. To actually exercise energy in a careful way. So breathing in and out, for example, has an energy to it. The breathing in and out of energy is breathing in, it rises, it swells, it flushes, it brightens. Breathing out, it releases, it soothes, it calms. So you need both of those. You need the positive or the driving, the activation, the sense of brightening up, breathing in, and you need the discharge, relaxing, soothing. Yeah, you could say the yang, breathing in, the yin, breathing out. Equal value. Clearly they're both necessary. And energetically, they're both necessary. So if you widen that reference to not just the air breathing out, but your energy breathing out, letting go, releasing, relaxing, softening, widening. Can you do that? How much of your life is spent doing that? Is it 50-50? Or is it actually most of the time you're energetically pumping to get the next thing? It's like you're always breathing in. Except it's not the air you're breathing in, it's your energy is always the next thing, prepare for the next thing, and then the next thing. And remember that, and don't forget that, and phone so-and-so, and this is happening, so better turn to that. It's always a rising, 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 rising. Yeah? Isn't it like that? Particularly in a busy, mechanized life, because machines don't breathe out. Breathing out is a waste of time. So in the productive world, it's all breathing in, all energizing, quicker, faster, and the human being is dragged along to operate in the same way, to move faster, quicker, more of that in, more of the yang. And it produces, power, but it also has the defective elements of the yang, which becomes brutal and aggressive, forceful. So business can be quite brutal. Traffic gets brutal. Yeah, pressures of daily life, you would start to shove and barge and push and speak sharply to each other. The brutalization was when the yang has no yin to release it. To soften it, to listen, to take in, to diffuse the discharge. And this element needs to be then cultivated. But it's not the discharge, the yin is not a kind of collapse, it's a steady, suffusive expansion, gentleness. We widen, soften, not slump, collapse, but widen, soften. And this is what the yang energy doesn't, or the yang mentality doesn't know. It has full on and then collapse, discharge, either go to sleep or switch something on and just collapse into the music, collapse into the movie, collapse into the video, collapse into the next thing. You know, so you lose attentiveness and just sink in. That's not the proper discharge of yin. Yin is like a soft receptivity that opens and includes and expands. It's loving. It's sensitive. It's receptive. It's just as much energy. But it's a discharge energy. It's not a power. It's an energy that listens and deepens and sensitizes. You know, takes in, doesn't move forward, doesn't progress. It's about deepening and widening where we are. So therefore we can properly digest our experience rather than gobble and rush to the next one. This, in fact, of course, is the thing that we tend to emphasize in meditation. But, of course, it needs to be balanced. You do need the sense of, yeah, let's inhale too, let's drive. But a little bit to one point, take it in. Yeah? So exactly, breathing is a very good practice and a very good metaphor. When you breathe in, you get that sense of sharpening and focusing, and then you soften, widen, breathing out. And this dual process purifies, because the in-breath or the yang gives you an aim. Yeah, and you re-establish an aim, you lift your intentions, your attitudes, you gently lift it to a particular aim or a point, a physical object, or even a mental attitude. I lift my aim towards attentiveness. I lift my aim towards goodwill. I lift my aim towards joy. I lift my aim towards harmony and peace. I lift, rather than sort of just go into the next habit of whatever your habits are. So it's definitely, you know, the rising, the intention, the sharpening intention is just not focused on a physical object or a discernal object. It's also a lifting and a sharpening or an aiming of attitude. Not just pointing the same attitude towards another object. This is very important because we can act with the same attitude of gaining and getting better and making sure it works. We say with the same business model. And you can operate with the same business model on a breath or in your mind. And it's doing exactly the same thing. You know, the attitude hasn't changed. The psychology hasn't changed. The view hasn't changed. And the person hasn't changed. They just found something else to get obsessive about and progressive about and competitive about and, you know, all that kind of thing. Where's the release in that? So it's very, my sense is, you know, when we look at our aim and our attitude, you have the aim and attitude is called samasankappa, and the aim and attitude is non-violation, non-brutal, kindness, compassion, sensitivity, renunciation, non-sensuality. We're not looking for sensations, visual thrills. We're not looking for thrills. We're looking for or towards widening, softening, cooling, sensitizing. So this samasankappa attitude, right attitude, is the the beginning of our activations, you could say. We have the Eightfold Path, right view gives us the perspective. Next step, samasankappa, right motivation, right approach. And this isn't just about, it is about daily life, but it's also about where your mind is coming from, when you're still, when you're moving, when you're eating, and when you're sitting, breathing in and out. It should be the same quality. So changing the business model. Yeah. Because there are certain other qualities to that model that make it defective. And you'll notice that some of the most fundamental hindrances that we can recognize definitely as this is some impurity, not moralizing, but this is oppressive, a contamination of the citta, contamination of awareness. And the two fundamental ones is that one is just mind is constantly thinking, obsessively thinking, when it doesn't need to, and you know you don't need to. Sometimes you think you need to plan next year. People tell you you have to plan next year. They're always telling me I've got to plan next year. So you can get it, you know, in the brochure and so forth. So everybody knows in advance what's going on. And you can see, yeah, I can understand that. But, you know, is it possible to not plan, have 10 days or a day or even an hour of not planning for the next thing? And you can see how the mind wants to do that, figure things out, because it has a certain security in it. Oh, now I know, now I know, now I've got it. There's a certain familiarity. I've been doing this for the last 10 years. So it's become a habit. And it's become a habit, and the habituation, it's become a person. Yeah? It's become who I am. And there's a second level of impurity. See, if the thing continues, it becomes who I am. Once it's who I am, everything I do is going to be affected by that. And I start also I judge myself in accordance with my ability to do that. And the sense of the business model is it's always got to get better. An improving personality. Yeah. Where's the release in that? Stress. Competition. Self-criticism. Performance. Yeah. So this obsessive thinking, even if it's not particularly unwholesome, sometimes it gets unwholesome, critical, negative, craving, and sometimes it's just endlessly planning, worrying, fantasizing. This and the other very obvious hindrance is the sleepiness or dullness, which is a little more than just feeling tired. You know, you feel tired. I just had a rest. How come I'm still feeling tired? And day four, I'm still falling asleep. Why is that? It's not because you haven't had any rest, because the mind, when it's not hyperactivated, doesn't have anything to rest on. We get so used to being in the activated state of thinking and planning and working things out and being stimulated that when you pull the plug on that, the mind keels over. And we didn't notice it before, because before maybe when we'd finished our work, we switched something on. We listened to a sound, or we went to a movie, or we had something to eat, or we had a conversation. So the mind was supported by another set of stimulation, not necessarily unwholesome, but, you know, wholesome stimulation of some kind gives it something to hold on to. Now, when that's taken away with renunciation, and this is a renunciation experience, bump. you see it a lot. I see it a lot in monasteries. Monks are always falling over. Not all of them, but a lot. Very common, particularly in the early days, because they're tired. It's just because the mind has got used for 25, 30 years of being supported by an idea, a thought, a project, a future, an ambition, an aim, and suddenly all that's gone. In monastic life, there's no future. There's no promotion. There's no pay. There's no wages. There's no end of the week. There's no vacation. There's nothing to switch on in the evening. Bump. And you go, you know, and you can even get used to it. Like meditation is that time when you get used to that experience. And then it really is very difficult to change it, because the person has become built around that. The low energy state has become, I feel calm. Well, yeah. Look pretty calm in a way, because in a way, yeah, you are deactivated, but the yin energy isn't there. as just the removal of one without the amplification of the other, of the receptive, the sensitive, the opening, the subtle. Yeah, we have the aiming and the intentionality and the sharpness of that, maybe. But you don't have the widening and the sensitizing and the timeless, yeah, suffusion quality. And without that, we often overstep. We don't notice things, so the mind is moving too fast. You don't notice subtle effects. You don't notice the links of how your mind jumps from one thing to another. It's just suddenly gone to there, and you didn't notice how it happened. But it's the subtler energy is able to sense. And there's the beginning of that mood, and it begins with a certain tightening or a certain running or a certain, you know, slipping away, a certain loosening or a certain tightening. And these are experiences that we can become more conscious of. So energy, working with energy and balancing it, steadying it, stabilizing, equal energy, equally breathing in, equally breathing out, equally aiming, equally opening, equally receptive to attentive, equalizing them. Many people need to strongly emphasize the receptive because it is so diminished in our way of life and our culture. We need to emphasize and activate the yin aspect because it's hugely missing in the business culture that has taken over our lives, the work culture, which has taken over our lives. You know, it's now clock rather than sun. The day is ruled by the clock, not by the sun. Sunlight and moon. Yeah. It's ruled by speed rather than breath, rather than rhythm of breathing in and out. Now there are other ways of looking at this and that fit in with that also. So what I'm saying, developing energy or balancing energy, there's also a certain default position that we may not recognize because it's so usual. That is, we sense ourselves primarily, I would guess, most of us would sense, you know, well, if you had somebody said, well, you know, like I can see the shape in front of me with sort of, you know, straggly bits and things on it. You know, where are you living? Which is you? And you're probably going to go up here. This is me. This is, take a photograph of this, and I'm up here, and this is where I feel myself. I'm sensing from up here because it's where the eyes, the ears, and the mouth, and all that is. This is the big headquarters up here. Yeah. And this is where the thinking pumping. Yeah, and there's a lot of sensitivity in the face. Muscles are pulling. Expressions, gestures. So this is a highly activated area, the head. And again, by and large, in our daily life, modern life, the head sits on top of the body and the body carries it around. So now, because when you get in a car, you just need hands and eyes. The rest of your body is just slumped in this cushion. And this is the eyes, the head is the important thing. You get behind your desk and it's the head again, looking at the screen or talking to people or writing something down. Yeah. Most people live from their heads and talk and think and use the visual sense almost exclusively to, well, much more than the sense of touch. Which is quite reduced. But touch is the most important and most richly dimensioned sense. So if you say something like taste, you can taste sour, salty, sweet, bitter. You know, you've got maybe a, you know, palette of five or so flavors. Touch, so many different textures and qualities to touch. Yeah. That we don't have words for. And I don't just mean touch as something where might physically place my hand on something, but the sense of the body feeling itself, you know, feeling the quality of the muscles moving as you breathe in and out, or feeling the qualities of warmth or vitality flowing through the body. That those impressions, which are there all the time, if we pay attention, and are powerful indicators of where energy is going, and the energy acts as the fundamental resource that the jitta draws upon to fabricate thoughts and emotions. You know, thinking takes energy, emotions and attitudes and intentions take energy. Where does it come from? Yeah, it's coming from the whole system. And the body basically feeds the mind, feeds the citta. So breathing it out, we take in oxygen, we take in food, we take in water. Body converts that into energy, and the mind then draws what it needs from that. Yeah, but this is the fundamental unit. And so that those energies can then be forceful or subtle or tentative, and the mind draws, and as it draws them, you can feel the energy shifting. Aggressive, obviously, you feel the energy very different. Aggressive from loving, for example, very different energy. These are obvious energies, but the energy has many subtler kinds of moderation that I won't go into right now, but the process of calming and steadying means cleaning and filtering and grooming energy so it becomes much more steady state than these rocking volcanic surges and slumps. Yeah? And for this we come out of our head, because your head primarily is about organizing where you're going and what you're doing. And so it will always do that. Put energy there, it will always go to, by default, to organizing and analyzing either what you've done or what you're going to do or what other people are about or what, you know, it does that. That's what it's supposed to do. And it's useful for when you want to do that. But it's no good when you just want to, you know, just feel things more directly. So the basis of energy, of where the body transfers energy, is through the abdominal center. This is where energy gets collected, where the air is breathed, where the food is digested and so forth. This abdominal center begins to transform the elements into energy, and then that can be then spread through the form, through the entire form, through breathing in and out. That's the way of nature. And so when we return to that, that in a way is the benchmark we want to return to. In the sense of just energy being formed, generated, and then we can just experience it. And what we want to form out of that, we have a little more choice over. Because it's not going by default into your head. It's not going by default into organizing and planning. And it's not going by default into the old personal form. Because the personal form has been concocted by social, environmental, domestic, karmic processes. They have to be understood, certainly, but we have a chance to reset, so we're not just regenerating the same person over and over again, the same model over and over again. Even if it's manageable, even if it's interesting, even if it's fun at times, there's no liberation in that, no final liberation in that. Yeah. You can be a good person by all means, but liberation doesn't mean you can't be a good person. It means you can go from being a person to being open, and then when you need to be a person, then you can bring up those intentions and attitudes and organize things in line with truth rather than old, learnt, and often defective or obsolete attitudes and programs. Right, so primarily the person these days is programmed around the business model. Performance, achievement, goal, success, and self-critical, self-conscious, isolated, because business is competitive. To get to be good enough, at least as good as the next, and preferably just the nosing ahead. Yeah. And that's perhaps putting it rather grossly, but I think we can be affected by that. Whether how much we believe in it, take it, I don't know, but that's the business model. And we are living in that. And so this is bound to drive us up into our heads, and then there's this constant search to be better. Push forward. And so that model then gets projected onto meditation. And yeah, you can get good, you can do it. And some people can definitely get better at meditating. But there's no final release in that. There's still somebody doing it who has to get better at it and claim it, you know. Maybe market it. That's the new system. 6 weeks, $1,000, you can do it too. There's no release in that, is there? That's the business model. Well, where is liberation? Yeah. Now, so just beginning and tying some of these themes together, coming out of the head, out of the attitudes of our brains, of our social and domestic and personal conditioning, something more organic, natural, just being a body. Being a body. But being a body in terms of not just the physical appearance, there's no liberation in that. There's differences and comparisons and self-consciousness in that. But being a body in terms of its inner qualities, its inner intelligence. The body has its own intelligence, which is not conceptual, it's energetic. That is, the body knows stress, it knows balance, it knows poise, it knows exactly how much energy it needs to walk up a staircase, how much energy it needs to balance itself to sit down rather than collapse onto a chair, how much energy you need to pick up a spoon so you don't fling it over your shoulder, how much energy you need to pick up a heavier weight. It knows it, and you touch it and it starts to know it immediately. And we get it right, or something gets it right, and a very high percentage of the time. And we know how to stand up and walk. You try and think it out. And you know how to find balance when you stand. You try and figure that out. The body has this exquisite intelligence, sensitivity, energies, pressures, balances, proprioceptive sense. It knows, okay, this is out of balance with that. Yeah. So there's this lovely steadying and intelligence there that you can adjust to. So it's not dumbing down, it's just using your mind, your thinking mind, to listen rather than talk. To learn rather than control. To not be in the driver's seat, to be in the back seat saying, this is how it happens. I get it. Wow. Rather than, this is what I've got to do. I've got to make this. I've got to get to this stage and that stage. Yeah, there's the driver. Yeah. And the other thing that the body knows how to do, which the mind finds very difficult to do, in fact, only a developed mind can do, he knows how to relax. Not collapse, but it knows very quickly. If you come into your body, it knows, I don't need that muscle. That can turn off. Don't need the fingers right now. They can rest. Don't need the cheeks now, the eyes. It's just this. That's all I need. This happening here in the diaphragm and the belly. Yeah. So because it's you can sense through your body, you can sense the muscle tone is sharp, tight in this area. It doesn't need to be. There's nothing wrong with it when you need it. So these aren't judgments, these are assessments. Say, well, that if I need it, fine, but now I'm not lifting a weight, I don't need the arm. It can just take a rest. I'm not holding anything, the fingers can relax. And so this profound relaxation can come, resting can come, not through calming exactly, but through activating subtle intelligence. Maybe this is what calming is. You know, a process rather than throwing a blanket over your mind and dumbing it down. It's about activating a subtle kind of intelligence to sense, do I need that now? It's not a dismissal, but now I don't need that. Because the body can do that, it can rest and turn things off. And at the same time, even more interestingly, it has another quality which knows it's still there. So I can reactivate it. When you breathe out, it knows it can let it all go because it knows how to pick it up again. And this is something that's means there can be also one reason why people find it difficult to let go because of fear. A strange kind of fear, a nervousness. Something, what will happen if I let, how will I pick it, and then it says, don't worry. Your body knows how to do that because it has also a background understanding or a fundamental blueprint of the whole picture, and it will activate it in a moment whenever you need it. So you can just release it and it will come back. Yeah, and I'll tell you this, but naturally on a reflex level it can be difficult to really sense that. You can let it all go and it will come back the moment you need it. Yeah. Because it's actually not controlled by your mind. Your mind can step off. That's the point. The body will be there when your thinking stops. When your emotions quiet down, when your attention relaxes, your body will still be there at a fundamental level. Even when the sensations become subtle, there's a fundamental sense of embodiment, which is quiet, present, deep, safe, grounded, unactivated, It is said, one touches the deathless in one's body. One touches the deathless with one's body. The deactivated state, the unconditioned, could be accessed in this very body. It's not a sensation. It's not a feeling. You don't have a word for it apart from deathless, unconditioned. And it means that it's like a computer. You can switch the whole thing off and then open the lid and it comes up again. How did the Buddha, I think one of the things I often kind of mused over, when the Buddha realized cessation, how did he come back again? He went to, so in his Nibbana experience, he goes into Nibbana, everything stops, quietens down, and then how did he come out if it all stopped? What brought it back again? Did he forget something? Or start planning for the next thing? No, it's like there's a fundamental sense that remains, an awareness that remains there, that is fundamentally embodied. Or awareness, if you like, I'm more comfortable with that, an embodied awareness that remains there when the activities cease. And you can trust it, because it's not conditioned by your society, by your karma, by your habits, by your personality, by whether you're good or bad, or what people think, or your success or failure. It's not conditioned by that. It's an enormous blessing. Yeah. And if we can, cultivate this quality of deactivating, there's a possibility that we could finally release even a few moments. Even almost on an intuitive level, you can touch into that. If you do something, it's a big shift. Even touching into that for enough, for one out-breath, is enough to change your life. Because once that's known, something about the show is over. The rest of it is the show. And you can't really get so gripped and mesmerized and desperate about it anymore. So, energy. The yang energy, the driving, the energy, these are just concepts I'm using. Sensitivity, the requirements for those. Centering in the abdominal region to help to reset our experience of embodiment from being up in our heads on top of our body to being in the center of it, where the head is something we can rise to and descend from. And the lower half of the body is as accessible as the upper. You can get down to your feet as easily as you can get up to your forehead. You can feel down your legs as easy as you can feel up your chest and throat. Yeah. So you reset, rebalance your body. Yeah. Both because this is going to give you a more thorough cleansing effect through the entire system. It's also going to even out your energy channels. So you're not always up in your head where it gets very compulsive and driven, and then collapsing, when it switches off. You've got something that's there all the time. Even when you lie down, you can be aware with that. Your energy extends down to your feet. It's a broader energy channel. It's a broader energy field. Therefore, it's more open. It's less constricted. And it's calmer. Because it's not based upon the power drive. It's based upon, enough energy to, if you want, if you need to, you can push. But you can push back, you can resist. Yeah, you can aim, you can say no. That's the yang, the protector. But there's also that which is just open, sensitive, enjoying. And the balance of these two is the reset, the cleansing of our energy patterns and the cleansing of our attitudes, the cleansing of our mind, and the substantial reduction of the compulsive person who's been formed in a particular way psychologically and even energetically. I think I'll stop there. Maybe some of these themes I'll return to. So I've laid out a few concepts and ideas and reference points, and maybe if one or two of those have remained with you. I don't expect all of it will. I don't ask for that. You'll be hearing the similar things repeated over and over again, so you just pick up the pieces that struck you that are relevant for you at this particular time. But certain points to emphasize again. Let's practice embodiment. Let's practice getting a steady energy. Let's practice contemplating body from the inside so we can feel where we feel tense or sharp or bright, and can we spread our energy over the entire body, and can we be less oriented through our eyes and heads? Can we also learn to not be so driven forward, but also to be able to rest, pause, soften, widen to the moment as it's happening. Less concerned about the next thing or the progressive state, much more involved with deepening awareness into what's happening right now. And seeing within that, what do I not need to keep doing now? Where can I find myself feeling more comfortable and settled now? Is there any progress considering in those terms? Anyone?